And welcome to the only show you need to get you through your Monday, to get you through this crisis in a world where few things feel reliable. We remain reliable. You're listening to the Jason Rand Show on AM 770 KTTH. We got a lot to get to. We only have an hour left to do it. We're going to dive into yesterday's pro-police rally. So proud of how many people showed up, acted responsibly, acted non-violently. I actually gave a speech to the crowd. They loved me, by the way. Peyton doesn't believe me, but he heard the crowd cheer, and now he does. We're going to play that speech for you. Andy Puzder from the Trump administration, or formerly of the Trump administration. He was one of the candidates for Labor Secretary. He's going to stop by to go through the jobs numbers. Plus, Matt Larkin officially is going to be taking on Bob Ferguson. Matt's going to join us and make the case. We're going to get to that and so much more. This hour of the Jason Rand Show brought to you by You Build It. Lots of news is happening all around the world and right here at home. So let's find out what's trending.
What's trending? Back the blue.
So yesterday, outside of Seattle City Hall, thousands of folks from the Seattle area ascended at a spot where they don't normally ascend. It's usually a spot where anti-cop protesters show up. But over the weekend, yesterday, we decided, you know what? No, we're going to take our city back. We're going to try to push back against this dangerous and reckless plan to destroy the Seattle Police Department. A plan that goes way too far. A plan that, unfortunately, is going to continue with today's vote at the Seattle City Council. But part of winning this long battle, because the end goal for some of the activists in the community is to literally abolish the police department and rebuild it in a vision that they see fit to. Similar to what we talked about in the last segment with Attorney General Bill Barr. They want to completely reform in an ideological vision that they hold, not that the rest of us hold, not that reasonable people hold. And so in order for us to win the long-term battle, we have to show up to events like this and remind a council that actually there are thousands of us, way more of us than there are of the activists, and our voices matter. You cannot ignore us. And for so many days at this point, we've been ignored by this council. You've made the phone calls and sent the emails to Councilmember Dan Strauss or Teresa Mosqueda or Andrew Lewis and Lisa Herbold, and you didn't get any responses. You see, when they don't have to show up to a council meeting where they can just do it on Zoom, they can completely ignore us. And so thousands strong showing up yesterday in front of other folks who shared the same pro-police message was incredibly important. And it's something like this that makes it very, very difficult to ignore. Now, at the last moment, I was asked to give a speech. I wasn't planning on giving a speech. I didn't prepare anything. Mike Solem pulled me aside and said, "Hey, Mike Solem, being the president of SMOG, would you like to say anything?" And you know what? I said, "Yeah, I would," because I care deeply about the police officers in this community. I care deeply about not just the officers, but their family members. And obviously, I care deeply about the communities that they serve. I see what's going on. I see the direction that this city is headed in. And it's not a good one. It's not a safe one. And so I had the opportunity to speak. I jumped on it. I got a nice little introduction from our friend, from our competitor, John Carlson. Here he is giving me an intro. And then I speak.
Another great guy, another great broadcaster.
Coming out here, it's really, really easy to defend police officers. And what I want you to do right now, it's a little bit of an exercise. It's going to take 5 seconds. Just look around real quick. There's a lot of people who showed up. Turn around for a second. Not too many of them. We are on the right side of this debate. And it's not political. It's not Republican or Democrat or independent. It might be socialist, one side. But we're on the right side of this. And we've had conversations in the past about the silent majority. It is unacceptable to be silent anymore. We know exactly what will happen if this council decides to defund the police by 50% or gets to the point of abolishing. We saw it happen at CHOP. We saw exactly what happened. Two black teenagers murdered, an attempted rape, vandalism every single day, assaults every single day. That's not the Seattle I want to live in, and I know it's not what we want this region to become. And so the question becomes, what do we all need to do in order to defeat this ridiculous amendment scenario tomorrow and all the nonsense that's going on? The truth of the matter is, Shama Sawant's never going to change her mind. She's not. Lorena Gonzalez and Teresa Mosqueda, they're not going to change their mind. However, we do have some people on that council who, when they asked for our vote, said that they supported police, said they wanted more officers, not less, and all of a sudden, because a few dozen of those people decide to show up outside their homes, all of a sudden they're saying, oh, well, I guess we got to cut the cops. Let us remind Andrew Lewis, Dan Strauss, Lisa Herbo of exactly what they promised each and every one of us when they were running for re-election. And for Strauss and Andrew Lewis to get that first position here, they told us they wanted more cops. The idea that we would cut the navigation team at a time where homelessness is getting worse is unconscionable. That we would dare go after the SWAT team is disturbing. We need to stand up for every single officer in this city, in this region, because they put on that uniform every single day, leaving their homes with a target on their back with that uniform, knowing they might not come home, but they do it because they do it in service of all of us. So it can't just end here today. It can't be showing up to one event. Every single person who's here right now, when we are done, you send an email to a council member, you give a phone call to a council member. Let's break their email servers. They need to hear from us. And if they ignore us, they do so at their own political peril. Just remember, way more of us than there are of them. The city needs to listen to us. Thank you, guys.
Good. That was inspirational. It's almost like I get paid for a living to talk. But it's true. They need to start listening to us. And when they don't, there has to be political consequences. They can't just get away with completely ignoring us. And I want you to think about this. Because, and I made the point earlier on where I asked everybody to look around. We're way, way, way bigger than the opposition. And yet we're the ones that are ignored. What happened last night in Seattle? We saw, again, marauders. Antifa agitators, activists who are going from business to business destroying it. They will be rewarded for the destruction by the Seattle City Council. Those of us who showed up yesterday to peacefully assemble, we will be ignored. Across the street from this rally, a bunch of counter-protesters showed up. That's what they do. I'm not intimidated by those losers. In fact, when you see them and they don't have weapons and they're outnumbered, they really, truly are meek. These are lanky, mostly white dudes who just sound like dorks LARPing. They're dressing up as Antifa members to give themselves some feeling of power, but they are not particularly demanding of any sort of attention. They don't particularly demand any sort of fear in their presence. They're not intimidating at all. But they're there to try to taunt. They were taunting old women. They were taunting young black men being called out as not black enough because they were standing on our side. They burned an American flag. They danced on it. They stomped on it. That's all they got. It's literally all they have. We have ideas on our side. We have knowledge on our side. We have a safe and healthy respect for law and order. They don't. And if this council and this city doesn't want to listen to us, fine. You can ignore us and you can pay attention to the activists who are destroying neighborhoods, who are destroying businesses. Go ahead. Who are responsible for the murder of two black teenagers at CHOP. Go ahead and listen to them. But at some point, this is going to come back and hurt your political aspirations. Dan Strauss, Andrew Lewis, two brand new council members, both of whom, when they were running for office, campaigned on more police officers, not less. Now they're voting to cut the police department staffing. You think you're going to be rewarded? You think those activists who showed up yesterday to burn the American flag, do you think they live in Queen Anne? Do you think they live in Ballard? Or Wallingford? Or Southlake Union? The ones who live in the city of Seattle, they live in the Central District in Capitol Hill. That's where they live. Some of them are at the UW. These are not your constituents, Andrew Lewis. I'm your constituent. The people who showed up from West Seattle yesterday, they're Lisa Herbold's constituents. The Antifa agitators. They're not represented, they shouldn't be, by Lisa Herbold or Dan Strauss or Andrew Lewis. And yet, they're being listened to. The council listens to them, not to us, the people who actually live in these neighborhoods. I'm hearing more and more rumors of a recall. A recall effort that's going to hit some of these council members. If it was up to me, I would say go after Andrew Lewis and Dan Strauss. They are vulnerable. They are politically vulnerable. These are two brand new council members who lied about policing and their support of police to get our vote. They are undeserving of staying in that office. We're not talking about decades ago, when they were just early on running, making promises that they couldn't keep. This was just merely months ago. And they've done an about face after they got some pushback from activists from Capitol Hill. I don't want Southlake Union and Queen Anne and Ballard and Wallingford to become Capitol Hill. Downtown Seattle is already gone. We're not going to win that back. Andrew Lewis, thank you for that. You've given up on downtown Seattle and Pioneer Square. We've already lost Soto. I don't want to continue to lose neighborhoods. And that means if we're not going to be represented in the Seattle City Council, if our values aren't going to be upheld and promoted, then folks like Andrew Lewis and Dan Strauss are undeserving of representing us. And it's important to push back. And push back will do. If you want to see more video and photos of everything that happened over the weekend at the pro-police rally, including some of the nastiness coming from the agitators, including an assault, text the keyword RANTZ, R-A-N-T-Z, to 1-800-465-8770. I've got video and photographs up. Go and text RANTZ, R-A-N-T-Z, to 1-800-465-8770. Let's find out what else is trending.
What's trending? National.
So the economy keeps showing significant signs of a comeback, but there is some concern that it's starting to slow down. Despite the pandemic, we saw 1.8 million new jobs in July with the unemployment number falling. But as I said, some economists are saying, yeah, it's going to start to slow down. Andy Puzder is a former Trump Labor Secretary nominee and the current senior fellow at the Pepperdine University School of Public Policy. Welcome back to the show, Andy.
Great to be here, Jason. Thanks for having me.
First, why was July better than expected?
Well, every month's been better than expected. Look, the economists have absolutely no idea what's going on out there. The phrase beats economist expectations is almost become an oxymoron. It's every month, every number, the manufacturing numbers, the consumer confidence numbers, the retail spending numbers, and the jobs numbers come in well ahead of economists' expectations. You know, that July was, they were saying, well, July things slowed down. It was the third best month in the history of the government reporting this data, which goes back to like 1939. I mean, it was only third because May and June were number one and number two. I think they're vastly underestimating the entrepreneurial spirit of the American people, our desire to get back to work, to get things back to normal. Now, the virus is still out there, and it's going to take a vaccine or very powerful therapeutics for us to get back to the economy we had going into the pandemic. But we're recovering rapidly, and I think we'll continue to recover rapidly despite what economists say.
Okay, so you don't see any evidence of any kind of slowdown coming in the next couple months?
Not so far. There could be things that happen, but the fact that we created 1.8 million jobs when economists were estimating would be 1.5 million. You know, if it weren't for May and June, 1.8 million jobs would be the largest number of jobs ever created in a month. It's hard to look at that number and say, well, this is discouraging. Of course, I guess if you're on the left and you want to hurt President Trump, that's what you do. But otherwise, it's hard. It's hard to look at this and be discouraged. It's a very good number.
There is an aspect that's political in all of this and where the economy takes us. I mean, we've got certain governors who are purposefully slowing down the reopening of the economy due to the coronavirus numbers. Here in Washington State, we're basically on an indefinite pause as to whether or not a county can go into the next phase of reopening. And obviously, the more you go down the phase in rollout, you get to open more jobs or at least get to reopen the economy. And so when economists look at that reality, do you think that's playing just too much of a role in their outlook?
Well, I think it is playing a role. Let's take New York. I don't want to pick on Washington State. You've got New York, which is 10% of our GDP, and they're shut down. They can't open restaurants, nothing. And since June, they've been stagnant. They've had under 1,000 new cases a day, and deaths per day in New York since June have been under 10. That's the whole state, under 10 deaths. Now, one death is too many. And this disease is never going, even if we get a vaccine, this disease isn't going away. Well, if you're under 10 deaths a day for a state the size of New York, what are you waiting for to reopen? Till it gets to zero? There's no sense to a lot of these states remaining shut down or completely shut down. Look, we need to file protocols. We should listen to Fauci. People should socially distance and wear masks and be careful. And if you don't feel good, stay home and stay away from people that are vulnerable. But, it's time to, you got a city like New York. I mean, my God, why are we keeping it shut down other than to hurt the president?
Well, there's also the aspect that's not getting enough attention from the economic standpoint, although even Democrats are starting to talk a little bit about that, is reopening schools. Now, when you choose not to reopen schools, it's obviously going to hit different people harder. If you're someone who's low income already or middle to low income, and now all of a sudden you're being told to go back to work while your kid can't go out of the house, that's going to cause some significant issues.
Well, it will, because for a lot of parents, particularly inner city parents, particularly economically challenged communities and individuals, that's a form of babysitting. And for these kids, that's where many of them get their meals at, their best meal of the day. So keeping this closed is a huge disadvantage for kids. There's very strong support from the medical community for getting these schools back open, because keeping them closed is a bigger threat to kids' health. And there's a study that just came out of the UK of 20,000 students. It basically says students are not great transmitters. They're not transmitters of this disease. So, I should be fair about this. Governor Cuomo has now come out and said we need to open the schools. I think even he's realizing that. But they're having such financial troubles in that state because of the 1% of people in New York pay 50% of the taxes, and that 1%, they've gone to Connecticut and Florida. Yeah. I mean, they're getting the heck out. It's like people leaving Seattle because of all the political and economic pressure. I'll tell you what, if you had a county near Seattle, and you put in some free market pro-growth policies and committed to keep them in place, I bet you could siphon a lot of business from your neighboring county.
Yeah. I mean, we're already seeing it, not necessarily county to county, but although significant numbers of people moving to Pierce and Snohomish County, but just moving into East King County and literally just a 5-minute drive over the water, and you're in Bellevue, and we're already seeing expansion of businesses there, particularly Amazon.
you know, it's such a beautiful area. I mean, you've got a zero state income tax. Your government has generally been responsible. If you're living in that beautiful area around Seattle, you know, you probably want to stay. So I think this is what's going on in Seattle is probably an opportunity for surrounding communities. Luckily, yeah. You're not driving people to other states, which is what New York is doing.
Fingers crossed at this point. Andy Puzder joining me on the line, former Trump Labor Secretary nominee. He's a senior fellow over at Pepperdine University School of Public Policy. But in the couple minutes we have left, pushing aside the strength of the economy and this comeback, obviously there are a lot of Americans who are still hurting, and that's why the president over the weekend made some announcements on the executive orders. Can you talk a little bit about what the impact on the economy a payroll tax holiday will have?
Yeah, can I say one thing? This is directly your question, but doesn't it seem ridiculous to people that that Pelosi, Senate Majority or House Speaker Pelosi is out there saying, you know, the president couldn't do this. It was unconstitutional. And by the way, he didn't do enough.
Yep.
I mean, they're saying, how can you say simultaneously that he did too much and he should have done more?
And of course, they were silent when the executive orders were being signed by President Obama. Then it was all good.
Yeah, exactly. So anyway, the payroll tax holiday will be huge for American workers. It does just exactly the right thing. It rewards work. People that make under $100,000 a year will get about a 7.5% bonus from this. It'll help them meet their bills. It'll help the economy because it'll help spending. It's a great idea. It's something that should have been passed in Congress. It's something that I hope will be passed by Congress. But the president did exactly the right thing.
There you go. Andy Puzder, former Trump Labor Secretary nominee and currently at Pepperdine University School of Public Policy. Andy, thank you so much for coming back on the show. I really appreciate it.
Jason, always a pleasure. Thank you.
Absolutely. Jason Rantz Show. In a bit, we're going to be joined by Matt Larkin. He is the candidate who will be taking on the incumbent Attorney General Bob Ferguson. Obviously, we want Matt Larkin to win, so he's going to stop by to explain how exactly he'll be able to do that. Over the weekend, President Donald Trump unveiled his executive orders, the ones that we thought were coming on Friday, but it kind of turned into a campaign speech. And over the weekend, he decided to deliver them. Four executive orders meant to push the conversation on COVID relief back onto Congress. I don't know if any of this is constitutional. I find it curious that the Democrats all of a sudden, after being okay with all the executive orders coming from Donald Trump, President Obama, including on DACA, all of a sudden they have an about face, executive orders are wrong, blah, blah, blah. Okay, fine. That, of course, is a political response. But I think also Trump's executive orders is a political response. The only reason he's doing this is because Congress, driven primarily at this point by the Democrats, wanting to spend way more than they ought to be spending on something like this and giving special carve-outs to blue states for things unrelated to COVID, they're stalling. They haven't been able to come to an agreement. They're at an impasse. And so the president is putting forward these four plans as a means to get the conversations and negotiations back in the swing of things. Because the Democrats don't want President Trump looking like he's got the backs of the American people. They don't want him to be seen as helping the American voter because they believe it, and they're right to believe this, it's going to help in his reelection campaign. And so on the one hand, you have a whole bunch of people claiming that this stuff is unconstitutional. We'll get into that in a moment. But I think on the other hand, it's putting a lot more pressure to get the negotiations back up and running. So let's go over the executive orders. One of them is enhanced unemployment benefits. There is a catch to it. The federal government will contribute $300 to individuals. Individual states are responsible for the remaining $100. So you're supposed to get a $400 payment. You will get $300 directly from the federal government, $100 directly from your state, and it happens per person per week, and it's retroactive starting on August 1st. And so that means we're in August 10th today, the last 10 days, or whenever this thing officially starts, last 11 days, whatever it is, you'll get back pay. Now, it's possible that governors are going to push back on having to pay the quarter percent there, right? Having to pay that $100 per resident. There are lots of states out there, including Washington, which has been hit hard, very hard, by the coronavirus. And as a result, the budgets are all over the place. They're deeply in trouble. And so they're going to have to figure out where they're going to get this money. So we'll see where it ends up going. Now, will there be a legal challenge to this? Maybe. Assuming it's unconstitutional, but you're going to get it from a Democrat, and the optics of it is not particularly good, is it? President Trump is saying, I'm going to deliver to you, person who's out of work, $400 a week. Democrats are saying, no, we don't want that. Another executive order. I don't actually like this one. I don't like this one at all. He's giving you a pass on evictions. The eviction moratorium. An eviction moratorium means that if you're not able to pay your rent to your landlord due to the coronavirus, you can't be evicted. Now, the reason I don't like that, number one, I don't think it's a federal issue. Number two, what about the landlords? What about the landlords who are due the money so that they can pay their own bills? And they're struggling right now, just like everybody else. Let's say you're a small landlord who is managing your own property. You live on the property in Bothell, and you've got five open units. Four of those maybe have just been filled, yay. But you got one more that's still open. So you're not collecting rent on that open one. And let's say one of the people on the property is choosing not to pay. You can't evict that person, hopefully get someone else in there. It's going to cause some more struggles. And we played some of the audio of local landlords who are struggling last week. So I don't like this. Unless you're going to come up and give me a different idea on how you can help the landlords as well. So we'll see. Another executive order. This is a good one. I think most students will like this. They are moving on student loan deferral. They're waiving student loan interest until the end of the year. That extends the current deferral on student loan interest that we currently have in place. So that's just being extended an extra, what, four months? So we'll see. Now, of course, this does not include privately held student loans, which is important to understand. And then the president, who's been focused on this for a while now, is temporarily giving a payroll tax holiday. So you don't have to pay your payroll taxes. And as a result of that, you're going to get higher take-home pay. And again, this is going to be temporary. And it's just a deferral. It's not a tax forgiveness. So you still have to pay those taxes after you're done with the deferral period. So let's say they do this for just a month. Okay, you get temporarily more money to take home for the month. That's meant to make it a little bit easier as some of you are struggling to pay your bills. However, once that moratorium leaves, once that tax holiday expires, you do end up having to pay the money that you previously would have owed. However, there's not going to be any additional interest or taxes. So you're still paying it. You're just holding on to some of your money right now in case you absolutely need to use it. Now, for what it's worth, over on the Trump side, they're, of course, defending this. Kayleigh McEnany made the announcement earlier today.
Oh, he most certainly intends to implement the four executive orders pertaining to unemployment insurance, student loans, the payroll tax holiday, and evictions. The American people need relief. And, you know, Chuck Schumer, it's funny listening to him there talk about these executive orders as not being enough. Well, what have Democrats put forward? Precisely nothing, except rejecting, at least on two occasions, a $600 clean extension of unemployment insurance. They have been fundamentally unserious in playing games on the back of the American people, while President Trump has acted in the American people's best interest.
So it's very politically smart for the president to do this. Now, is it constitutional? Don't know. I generally don't like executive orders, but the fact of the matter is Democrats did it a lot and they were successful at it. And no one on the Democratic side really said anything. But now that the president is doing it because he's a Republican, because they don't like Donald Trump, they're all screaming about how unconstitutional it is. Over at CNN, Representative Jerry Connelly, Democrat, He's on the Oversight Committee. Said this is obviously all unconstitutional.
As you, I think, indicated in the promo here, the Constitution is pretty clear in Article 1 who has taxing and spending authority, and it's the United States Congress. And there was a reason that the first article of the Constitution dealt with congressional powers, not executive powers. So if there's anything Congress absolutely has control over, it's those two things. And this is obviously, in my view, unconstitutional and should be
challenged. Okay, well, then go ahead and challenge it, Congressman. Go ahead and challenge it. Get Jerry Nadler up there to challenge it. Get Pramila Jayapal up there to get a challenge. Get AOC up there. Have your pick. Go ahead and tell the American people that you want them to not get higher take-home pay during a pandemic because you're unable to negotiate with the Republicans on this. Tell me how good of a PR campaign that'll be leading into an election. Go ahead. I hope that they do. But instead, what are we hearing behind the scenes? That they're trying to get, Democrats are trying to get money for pet projects in their state. That now the American people have to bail out a whole bunch of other states, not only just for stuff around the pandemic, but stuff, as Kayleigh McEnany notes, had nothing to do with the pandemic.
Yeah, the president's always been clear here that, you know, he wants to support state and local governments, but only for COVID-related matters, and he doesn't want to bail out blue states that had structural problems long before this, so that's where his priorities lie.
And that's the right move, and it's not even that I take a general position, although generally I do lean in this direction for sure, but it's not like I'm saying we should never, ever, ever give federal funding to states to tackle important projects. That's not my position. My position, however, is very clear in that we should be spending it on COVID-related issues right now. Our economy is showing some signs of slowing down. We have to make sure that our economy is as strong as it possibly can be during a pandemic, and that means going after pandemic-related issues, not pet projects. 1-800-465-8770 if you want to join the conversation. Send me a text, 1-800-465-8770. Coming up next, Matt Larkin's going to stop by. He's taking on Bob Ferguson. He's going to tell us how he's going to turn that campaign into a successful one. We're going to get that and so much more. Welcome back to the Jason Rand Show on AM 770, KTTH, and 94.5 FM on the Greater East Side. Attorney General Bob Ferguson will be facing Republican challenger Matt Larkin for Attorney General in the general election. Matt Larkin collecting 24% of the vote. He joins me. Welcome back to the show.
Thanks, Jason. Thanks for having me back.
Well, congratulations on a significant win. Were you nervous going into the election, or did you generally get a feel of momentum?
You know, we had a feel of momentum. There was a positive poll that had come out the week before, mm-hmm. So we were cautiously optimistic. But you never take anything for granted, and we sprinted to the finish, and we're proud of what we left on the field. We gave it our all, and we're looks like we're moving past. So we're excited. Now the real work begins.
Yeah, and it's not going to be easy. I mean, when you look at Bob Ferguson, no. As much as, you know, folks on the right can't stand the guy, getting 56% of the vote, that is a really good position to be in as an incumbent. So what's the plan?
Well, thankfully, the most recent count dropped him below 56. I think he's at 55.91, and hopefully that continues to go down. We're watching it pretty close. But you're right. He's a formidable opponent. He's raised a lot of money. He's at $3.5 million, and we've got about one-twelfth of that raised. So we do have our work cut out for us. But I think our message is going to resonate. And I think that's what carried me through the primaries, frankly. We have a message that people can cling on to. We have real problems in this state, and it feels to a lot of folks that Bob Ferguson isn't addressing them, especially lately when crime is through the roof. We've got a homelessness issue that continues to plague us, and drug abuse is out of control. And as lawless rioters are taking over our cities, where is our AG? He's not there. And that message is starting to sink into people, and that's the message we need to take to the fall against Bob. We just need the money to be raised to get our message out there in front of the people.
So what is it that you feel that you can accomplish as Attorney General on the topic? Let's just go with homelessness first.
Sure. Well, there's a lot of things you can do as Attorney General. To start with, you can address the problem. You can call it a problem. We don't even have that from our current Attorney General. He's never mentioned the word homelessness. And it's a real issue. And because so many issues are intertwined with it, Jason, you've got drug abuse is intertwined with it. You have crime that's intertwined with it. So that's why it's such an important issue. But you can lead from the top, from Olympia. You can bring people together. And an Attorney General is in a unique leadership position in that people listen. You can lobby legislators for policies. You can bring community leaders together on it. And you can actually put task forces together within your own office to address the issue. So there are a lot of solutions to this. It's not a silver bullet. There's a lot of angles we need to approach it at. But it needs to be addressed and it needs to be approached.
What would a task force actually look like? Because obviously when we're talking about homelessness, there's so many things that can lead to homelessness.
Oh,
so let's say you put together this task force, what would it look like?
Well, the task force is going to be tasked literally with step one. It's a group of people from my office, from the Attorney General's office. We have 1,100 employees in that office, by the way. So it's a big office. It's going to be a group of people with that focus. They're going to, at my direction, sit down and talk to community leaders and legislators like Senator Steve O'Bann, who's a leader on this fight, and a friend of mine. He has real good ideas. And that task force is going to be set about pooling people together and bringing good ideas together and then saying, how can we as the Attorney General's office help you? How can we get your backs and start dealing with this problem? And hopefully they have some good ideas, and I think we'll bring some good ideas. We'll suggest public-private partnerships for a lot of these issues. I'm so heartened to see Amazon start partnering with Mary's Place over the last year. I mean, you talk about that frequently. I think there's a lot of good solutions here, but it starts with leadership, and we don't have it right now.
Just joining me, I'm talking with Matt Larkin. He is the Republican challenger going into the general election to take on Bob Ferguson. His website, if you want to learn more about his candidacy and, for him, very importantly, donate some money, MattLarkin4AG.com. Matt Larkin, F-O-R-A-G.com. So you're going up against someone who you know there's going to be a lot of money into it. I mean, just realistically,
yeah.
Even if a lot of people donate to you, you know that Bob Ferguson is just going to turn to some of the big donors, both in and out of Washington
yeah.
State. So how do you manage to get it out there, your message, not just dealing with underfunding when you're comparing yourself to Ferguson, but during a pandemic where you're not able to campaign traditionally?
No, that's a really good question. And we were hindered big time by this pandemic.
Yeah.
We had a very full spring. March, April, May were booked solid with events and fundraisers, and they were just canceled, wiped clean. So we were starting from scratch, which is why we're 1/12 of Bob Ferguson's haul. Plus, we don't have the name ID. Obviously, he's a two-term incumbent. He's been a career politician. And I'm new to the game. I'm a fresh face, which is an advantage other than people don't know me and they need to get to know me. We need to get the money coming in so we can get our message out there. We're hoping to get some money from outside groups, from PACs, from individuals, from anyone who wants to contribute. We don't have the advantage. A lot of Democratic candidates get the union money, and Bob is certainly no exception to that. It's going to be flowing into his coffers. But we get sources from other places. We get them from conservative PACs. We get them from small business owners. We get them from big business owners, people who are actually putting food on the table for Washingtonians and creating jobs. There's a lot of places that we're going to turn to and say, hey, guys, we need to get some money raised. We need to get our voice out there. So chip in and help. And frankly, we've been so heartened even through COVID, we've seen an influx in donations. And they're not huge donations. A lot of them are small, Jason. We've gotten really small donations, but sometimes those mean the most because people are struggling right now. Businesses aren't opening. People are out of work. So I'm heartened at what we've seen during COVID. And as things continue, as people continue to go back to work, hopefully if the governor gets his act together, we will start seeing those donations get bigger and more frequent.
Ferguson has spent most of his time, it feels like, just suing the Trump administration. But when you go over some of the lawsuits, are there any that you agree with?
I mean, first of all, you should never be suing a sitting president 69 times.
Correct.
That's just not the way the office was intended. We have real problems in this Washington. Frankly, I don't care about that Washington. We have issues here that are pressing more now than ever, frankly. But I mean, there's a few in there that you could make a case for, but I just don't think it's the right time or place to be making lawsuits against the president. He claims that he's even-handed because he sued President Trump 69 times, and he sued Obama twice. That does not feel even-handed to me. And we had pressing issues before President Trump was in office, and he still wasn't dealing with them then. So the litmus test I'd look at is how many Washingtonians are affected, how much harm does the actions of the president bring to the state of Washington. But at the end of the day, I'm elected to protect the people of the state of Washington, mm-hmm. and you've got to do some cost-benefit analysis on how do we protect the most Washingtonians at a time on this stuff. And 69 times suing the president, and he calls them Trump lawsuits, and then he'll fundraise off of them. That's not how the office was intended to be used, period.
Yeah, he's turned it incredibly ideologically driven office, and that is a problem. Regardless, I don't want you doing that as a Republican. I don't need the politicians to take over the attorney general's office. This is not what it's supposed to be about.
No, it's not, Jason. And that's what's so sad. It's become so hyper-partisan. And it's not intended to be that way at all. You are the watchdog for the people of Washington State. And frankly, I said it a minute ago, we have real pressing problems here that need to be addressed. And if I wanted to go deal with the federal government, I would have run for Congress or Senate. Like, that's not my priority. I'm from the state. I'm a lifelong Washingtonian, and we need to clean this place up. We have a lot of work to do once I'm elected this November.
The candidate is Matt Larkin. The website, MattLarkin4AG.com. Spell it all out. MattLarkinFORAG.com. Matt, best of luck in the general. I'm sure we'll hear from you in the next few weeks as we join you in the fight to get rid of Bob Ferguson from that office. Thank you so much for stopping by.
Absolutely.
I really appreciate it.
Yep. Thanks, Jason. Have a good one.
You as well. Again, it's MattLarkin4AG.com. If you have any money to spare, consider a donation. MattLarkin4AG.com. He's going to need all the fundraising help he can get going up against someone like Bob Ferguson. MattLarkin4AG.com. Again, that was Matt Larkin, who will be taking on Attorney General Bob Ferguson. Obviously, we're voting for and supporting Matt Larkin, and through the next few weeks, we'll tell you how to get more involved as well. Thank you guys so much for tuning in. I really, really do appreciate it. Don't forget, twitter.com/JasonRants. Coming up next, Ben Shapiro.